The year 1859 was a turning point. It was the year of the publication of Charles Darwin's On the Origins of Species. Laying out the theory of evolution, the book stirred up its fair share of controversy, but it also helped lay the foundations for modern biological sciences. Philanthropist Chris Darwin is the great-great-grandson of Charles Darwin, and he's spent his share of the Darwin family inheritance trying to halt the global mass extinction of species. Chris is an ambassador for Bush Heritage Australia and has been helping to purchase and protect habitat for threatened species. But now he's shifted his focus a little, and he's just launched what he's called the Darwin Challenge. It's a call for evolutionary behavioural change to eat less meat. Chris Darwin is speaking with Chris Borschmann from London.
I've been personally inspired by my great-great-grandfather, Charles Darwin. And maybe the most famous summary of his theory is, it's not the strongest species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but the ones most adaptable to change. And many people want to understand how to improve their health and their lives.
So why pick your first fight in this Darwin Challenge with meat, with meat eaters?
Well, meat has such a massive impact, not only on the environment, but on our health. And so it seems to tick a lot of boxes. Australia at the moment is the second greatest meat-eating country in the world. So we eat about 90 kilos of meat a year, the average Australian. And a lot of it's very low quality. So that's not very good for our health. It's not very good for the health of the planet because of the impacts on climate change, water, biodiversity. So it just seems to be a win-win just to moderate our meat a little bit.
You say if we get this right, reducing meat consumption and demand could be the silver bullet to solving climate change and avoiding the next great extinction event. Surely that's hyperbole.
Well, that's incredibly exciting for me because I've spent the last 26 years trying to stop the mass extinction of species. And it is a silver bullet because 74% of all habitat destruction in the world is for the livestock industry, and habitat destruction is the greatest threat on land. And in the oceans, the fishing industry is responsible for the decline of the oceans primarily. And if we moderate our meat there as well, we help it. So it is actually a silver bullet, and that is pretty exciting.
So you're calling this the need for a little evolutionary change, but you're asking for people to break the habits of a lifetime. Surely evolution is more biologically random and immutable than a lifestyle change, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think you're right, actually. We are stretching the definition of evolution to talk about behavioural change. But I suppose Charles's theory was that you can have two types of evolution. Obviously, one is genetic evolution, but you can have behavioural evolution as well, and this is what we're encouraging, a little bit of evolution for the benefit of us all.
So give us an idea of the rundown, the stats, the difference that this will make if people eat one less meat meal per week or more.
Yeah, sure. So you should live about 45 minutes longer. Each meat-free day you have is about an extension of your life, 45 minutes. So if you have one meat-free day for a whole year, you should get 2 days. You get 2 days longer. So if you have a meat-free day for a whole year, you get 2 days longer of your life. As far as climate change is concerned, it's about every meat-free day, it's about the equivalent of driving a car about 5 kilometres. When you come to habitat destruction, if you do one meat-free day for a whole year, you save a tennis court of forest.
So what are the projections? What are we looking at if trends continue with more meat being consumed by more people on a growing planet? What are we looking like in 30 years' time, in 2050?
Wow, yes. Okay, so it's really interesting. We've got two trends going on. If the trend that started in the Western world continues, we may not see meat keep increasing. But if that trend proves to be ephemeral, then actually we may double meat consumption in the next 35 years. And if that happens, no sapling or sardine on the planet is safe.
What about developing nations then? Because presumably there's massive growth projected there.
Yeah, there is. And remember that a lot of that is actually there just copying us. They want to be Western. But if they see the Western world actually start to say, wait a second, don't follow us, a bit like in climate change, if they perceive the Western world is saying, no, we made a mistake here. This huge quantity of meat, it's not good for our health. It's not good for the planet. Don't follow us.
Have you had any pushback from the producer organisations in Australia, Meat and Livestock Australia or the Pork or Poultry Producers Associations? I mean, you talk about high meat consumption, you talk about us consuming low quality meat. Surely they would reject that description of Australian meat.
I mean, I think the first thing to remember is the farmers are going to have a very good next 35 years because I don't think we're going to see a reduction of meat demand globally. Yeah, I think it'll probably almost certainly increase because we're going to have an extra 2 billion people being born onto this planet in the next 35 years. So I don't think we're going to put any farmers out of business. And we haven't had any pushback by the livestock organizations because I think that they realize that they're onto a really good thing in the next 35 years. I think that the other thing which you mentioned, which is really important, is we're not actually saying don't eat meat. I'm actually encouraging people just to give up the low-quality meat because that is the stuff that's bad for our health. So it's the sausages, the hamburgers, the pies. If you can give up that stuff, the World Health Organization has actually said that processed red meat, they are now convinced, can cause you cancer of the digestive system. So don't give up all meat, but just moderate your consumption of red processed meat.
You won't be a popular customer the next time you visit McDonald's, clearly.
No. Well, I don't think I... Actually, I do... McDonald's do really good salads. Because when I bicycle from the Blue Mountains to Sydney, which I do every now and again, I stop at the McDonald's on the highway. And if you ask them for a salad with no dressing, I tell you what, it's a really nice salad. So maybe if they just produce a few more salads and a few less burgers, everybody will be happy.
So your great-great-grandfather Charles Darwin, wasn't a vegetarian. What would he make of all this, especially the links to climate change?
Well, I tell you what, Charles was definitely not a vegetarian. In fact, they tended, when they found an animal, a new species, they tended to examine it. And often they used to shoot it, then examine it, and then often they'd eat it. And he apparently once ate an owl, which is pretty extraordinary. So times have changed a lot, and I think that's what he would say. He would say, what was appropriate 200 years ago when the world population was a billion is a very different diet from what's appropriate today when we've got 7 billion people on a small planet. We need to design a diet that is appropriate for our civilization and our circumstances. And that has got to be a really sympathetic one, both to ourselves and to the planet. So I think Charles would go, you are being adaptable. If you are adaptable, you will survive.
Chris Darwin, thanks for talking to RN Breakfast.
Thank you very much, Greg.
That's Chris Darwin, the great-great-grandson of Charles Darwin, speaking there from London with Greg Bushman. You're listening to RM Breakfast.